All right, welcome. Tonight's 30th lap of the Senior Fellowship. The title is The Shiksa Goddess. Understand the allure of intermarriage. Okay, we gotta get in on that. We begin with a video. Okay, so I'm gonna give you a little little warning. You might find this offensive. But that's okay. But I found it was very just telling you right up front. You might be offended by this. I think women will be more offended by this than men. The guys will not be offended by this, but okay, just warning you, and I apologize in advance. It is. It's from a musical. Okay. All right. Here we go. Okay. Well, I'm teaching you some good stuff. Okay. Front lights. Get the lights.
Oh, God. I'm looking
at you the more I hear it. Splinter and crack from 90 miles away. I feel a sudden. The JCC of Spring Valley is shaking crumbling to the ground. And my grandfather's rolling in. You have a tattoo that would rock. You have a shaved head that would be cool. If you came from Spain or Japan or the back of a van, just as long as you're not from Hebrew school, I'd say, now I'm getting somewhere. I'm trying to bring you through. I'd say, hey, six of guts. I've been waiting for someone like you. I have been waiting for days for some terrible eyes and the head of the twins. I've been waiting to have her cream black Annie makes me scare and think it's a piece of curse. And Stacy Rose and Ellen Cap with Julie Silver and Jamie Stein. I've had shopping dinners on Friday nights. My first menu, but I can barely use my breath. I've been standing for days with the phone in my hand, like an idiot scared to death. I've been wandering through the desert, I've been beaten, I've been hands. My people are suffering thousands of years now. Yes. Some that would matter if you once were in jail or you once were a man. If your mother and your brother had relations with each other and your father was connected to the godly plan, I'd say, well, nobody's perfect. It's tragic, but it's true. I'd say, hey, six of guys, I'm waiting for someone like
So. Okay, so that's the, okay, we're going to get into it now. Good voice.
That was a real play?
Yeah, it's like Broadway. You can hear the guy got it. It was on Broadway, then made into a movie with, who was that girl that just saw? What's her name? Yeah, Kenna.
Like I promise.
Right, Kenna. So she's the Shiksa, because she is, in fact, a Shiksa. She's not Jewish. Anyways, all right. So the question is, why does the character Jamie Wellerstein find all of these Jewish women unacceptable? What's wrong with Lisa Katz? I know Lisa Katz. And I'm Mindy Stein. I actually know Mindy.
Because
he's weak. All right, but okay. So what's really in the weak? What's the okay, I understand that, but that's we didn't really let's hear you.
Do we need more background for that?
Yeah, I don't think he really explained his reasoning.
He did. He alluded to it. You're right, because there's a whole. I mean, obviously, there's a whole movie. Or
it sounds like they're different from what he's used to.
He said a line that was very revealing.
They're not from Hebrew school.
That's all you really need to know. So let's unpack
that. I was thinking Spring Valley also.
Right. So he doesn't want a girl from Hebrew school. Okay, so what's wrong with the girl from Hebrew school?
Jappy.
Is it because of a certain...
Closed-minded.
Is it sheltered.
Not pretty.
He's familiar with that.
Now, by the way, let me talk about the not pretty. Okay, first of all, I've had... Listen, guys, so as you know, I want to share something, which is... this is a brief of a good issue. I've had... Women come to me and tell me, Rabbi, there is no good-looking Jewish man. Rabbi, there is no good-looking Jewish women. Okay, so I say to them, "Oh, really?" I say, "How many people are on J date? 50,000, roughly. Let's call it half. You know, let's say half. Let's make it very simple: half men, half women. Not exactly." So you got to figure the top 10% of those people, the 2,500 of each category, are good looking because it's a bell curve. It's a distribution. Top 10% are super, you know, just break it up into tranches, right? It's am I right? I mean, clear? So clearly there are good looking Jewish women and Jewish men. You may not be meeting them, whatever, but they are there.
Questions? A great topic that you're bringing up this way.
I've had people complain, and you know, part of their complaining about their dating life is that I've had, you know, I hear a whole acre worth of complaints against men, and a whole acre complaining worth about women. I said, you know, dude, and do that. I mean, come on, it's not true. Okay, there's other factors. Okay.
Yeah, other
let's talk about the other. Right, the other. No, I'm not saying the other. I'm just saying other reasons why you're constantly dissatisfied. Now this guy, now this gets into question number two. Why do you think he finds Kathy, the Shiksa goddess, that's Kendra, what's her last name? I'm blanking out on it. What?
Anna Kendra.
She's actually Jewish?
Yeah, I think
so. Oh, that is so damn funny. She plays a Shiksa. She plays a Shiksa goddess. Okay, it's funny. All right, but she looks kind of not Jewish. All right, whatever. We will resolve. You will look on Wikipedia and you will solve this conundrum. Okay. So why, let's go back, why, and now she could be, she could have drink blood, she could be, whatever, he has all these, she could be anything, okay?
He doesn't want a girl from the
school. But what does that mean? What does that mean?
Well, he knows him familiar or reminds him of his mother.
Okay.
He doesn't want a cat, he's not just looking for that Catholic girl level, he's looking for this, he was good. In your theory.
Okay, that's something very interesting. So Jay brought up something which is a classic idea, going back to all the way to the forbidden fruit theory, which goes back to even Adam and Chava, Adam and Eve. That part of the appeal of the woman or converse, it could be the same thing for a man, is the person that you are not allowed to have. That adds a little more shine to the experience. Go on.
So it's interesting because you're saying that as opposed to the non-religious woman with the tattoo or the twin wings or all that stuff.
He's not interested in her.
You're sure about that?
Well, that's okay. This is okay. Okay.
I'm saying it's just the nature of
okay,
the theory.
This
of
was
the
a play made into an unsexual movie. Okay, that's what happened. All right, but the song brings up it's an exaggerated depiction. Now, more unfortunately, we're going to analyze and we're going to go into the Chumash and everything. But nowadays, most people intermarry because they grew up with non-Jewish people as part of their environment. It's not even a decision for most people. You know what I'm saying? It's not like he's already like a little bit retro in the sense like I did go to Hebrew school and I went with all these women, whatever, and I've dated them and been with them, and I don't want that. Most people are just there are people who are so assimilated that a minority of their friends are Jewish. Most of their friends are Jewish, and they simply you marry who you socialize with. Very unconscious experience. Yes.
That's what I would say. I didn't see the forbidden fruit thing in the song. I saw the I don't want to do anything happen anything to do with anything. Jewish.
What's the proof from the lyrics? You can say it's for sure that she's right. She's for sure right.
As was not wanting to have anything to do with Jewish.
Not because of that. He's willing to accept that even if she drinks blood and she was once a man, I mean, again, she has a tattoo, right? In other words, even though all those objective negatives, he wants to put up the objective negatives because of this forbidden fruit factor. There's more to this as well.
Or just that he doesn't want Jewish.
Yeah, but why not Jewish?
He's sick of it. He's not interested in it. He's been there, done that. And he's not interested in having that life. He doesn't want to have He doesn't want the Jewish, the culture, the Sabbath, the kosher, the rules, the this. He wants anything.
Well, there are many secular Jews. You could marry an atheistic Jewish girl. She doesn't have any rules, or she means other than her own making. Maybe a millennial, I think a full third or 25% of millennials are atheists. Also, they have no religion; they're just Jewish. So there's plenty of that variety available. Right, he's waiting for her to show up.
He was hurt. He wasn't the popular guy. The girls turned his back.
I don't know the narrative. Okay.
And it made him crave the forbidden fruit.
Okay.
A guy where just he could get the mind. Girl with the pretty looks wasn't Jewish, but the girl with the pretty looks would have given him time of day.
Right.
I
just came to mind the other way. A guy who did all get all the Jewish girls and the looks and everything, and it just wasn't for him. It didn't do it for him, and he ended up with a shit set.
Okay.
Mostly, it's probably an insecurity for his own insecurity as well.
Okay, what do you explore that? What do you mean by that?
Well, because he's probably afraid to, he's like scared to take on something kind of serious, meaningful, if he goes outside of anything religious or Judaism-oriented, he doesn't have to. He feels like he's more free, like, I don't have to follow the rules. I can do whatever I want. It's like,
That's another factor.
Yeah.
Another factor is that this is let's call it a safe space to have, even if they're not observant, whatever, the Jewish background culture has somebody could find it suffocating in some way. And this way, he's like completely off the reservation, free. Okay? We're just throwing out possibilities. We're just warming up. We're warming the crowd up here as we do. Let's go to another next video. The classic scene. We talk a lot.
Nice ham this year, Mom. Oh, yeah. Grammy always does such a good job.
A great sauce.
It's dynamite. We went over to the swap meet. Annie, Graham, and I got some nice picture frames.
We really had a good time.
Anne tells us that you've been seeing a psychiatrist for 15 years.
Yes, I'm making excellent progress. Pretty soon, when I lie down and crash, I won't have to wear the lobster bib.
Dwayne and I went out to the boat basement.
We were caulking hulls all day.
And Randolph Hunt was drunk, as usual.
Oh, that Randolph Hunt. You remember Randy Hunt, Eddie? He was in the choir with you.
I can't believe his family. Annie's mother, she's really beautiful. And you're talking swap meets and boat basements, and the old lady at the end of the table is a classic Jew hater. And they really look American, you know, very healthy, and they never get sick or anything. Nothing like my family. You know, the two are like oil and water.
Ah, what a prize, man. Who needs this business?
His wife has diabetes.
Diabetes?
Yeah,
that ain't his friend's diabetes.
Let me tell you, the man is 50 years old and doesn't have a substantial job.
Oh, yes, that's right.
What are you talking about? I don't know what you're talking about.
George, defend him.
Oh, you're not. We're in for it.
Oh, my. We had a tower now.
How do you plan to spend the holidays, Mrs. Singer?
We fast.
No food. Not your tongue brushing.
What is that? I don't understand.
I get the truth. Neither do we.
All right.
All right. All right. All right. So, pull back on. So, why does Woody Allen think? Why does Woody Allen think the Wasby family looks at him as a chassid?
He's a little insecure, and felt a little built out of place. So imagine
that they. Right, they look at him as being you're the.
Like, why? Yeah.
That's
their
neurotic and
well, he is.
Anxiety, so.
Well, that's who he is.
Right. A lot of people think of American Jews that way. That's right. Like a thing that people he's done a lot of damage actually. So I agree with Woody Allen. That's what Woody Allen
is. Right. I mean, that person does exist. Yes. We have all met that person.
Yeah.
Okay.
But people think of whether it's to do with mother or that Nemeshi guy. Like that's what this guy is trying to get away from.
Right. He's that's why is he with Annie Hall?
He wants to be a fresh, have a Christmas tree and be an American.
He wants to fit in.
Yeah.
And then when he shows up there, say, oh, this is good ham. Good ham. And she looks at him as, what do you mean? Who are you fooling? You're a chassid. You're just not wearing your outfit. But I see your outfit underneath your fake American clothes. You're not a real American.
Right.
Now, so that actually has another allure, not just a forbidden fruit aspect. That's a second allure. Goes into the what Dan's saying. What other aspect is this? In other words, the appeal to the woman as a vehicle of fitting in. This happened, by the way, interesting stat. So we all know the largest and one of the oldest reformed temples in New York is Temple Emmanuel, formed by German Jews in the mid-1800s. All of the original board members, their descendants have all married out. Now, there's a motivation to marry. Why do they want to marry into American stock? Very simple. They wanted to fit in. They wanted to be accepted. Exactly. I mean, again, you don't really remember this, you know, this in time of your parents, but until 1964, there were quotas at all the Ivy League schools for amount of Jews. Until 1964, there were quotas. It only accepted a certain amount of Jews.
Well, now they're doing the same thing with Asians. And you see, like, the newspaper articles that they're comparing it to when they
did that. Did not see that, but I believe that.
FYI.
Okay. All right. So, let's read it out loud. We don't have time for the whole. All right, so let's, read out loud. Who'd like to read out loud? Let's have Dan the Man. That's down to
Mark.
Yeah.
All right.
This is next week's Parsha, by the way. This is Parsha's Pinchas.
When the people began to behave immorally with the Moabite girls, the girls invited the poor to their religious sacrifices, and the people ate and
stop right there. What the heck happened here? Here's the Jews, the 40th year of the thing. They're about to go into the land of Israel. Their parents died because they sinned repeatedly. And they're in the next generation. They show up to Shittim, which is on the border of Moab. They're in modern day Jordan, okay, a little north of the Dead Sea. And they're camped out next to the country of Moab. What's going down here? Then they start to have a sexual relations with, you know, with the Moabite girls. Then the girls invite them to the religious sacrifice. So they're having their festivals. And they ate. And then they worshiped the gods. And then they became involved in the Baal Peor. What's going on here? Baal Peor is the idolatry of Moab. What the heck is happening? And God, of course, is displeased with this.
And where is Moses?
So let's go through another question. Good question on that. Sure. So let's just deal with the first part. Well, I'm not focused on so much on the punishment. You can take a look at that. Well, how do you explain this? What's the mechanism going on here? I think with this background, I think we have the elements here. In other words, I'll ask you a simple question. Was there a Shidduch crisis in the desert?
No.
So basically, all people of marriageable age, you can presume, were mostly married. So they're having sex. So why did they have to have the sex with the Moabite women?
Were they hotter? Not pregnant.
Okay, so
Not pregnant all the time.
Okay, but then, so one thing is to have all the guys are very uncomfortable now. Everybody's uncomfortable now. Okay, but then they get invited to their religious service, sacrifice. So what happened? What happened to all their values? They were, you know, what about the Ten Commandments? Thou shalt have no gods other than me. What happened to all that? Yeah, but they already had the sex.
Yeah, but I mean...
Go ahead.
Like, if you just
feel
into that, and like, if something different and something new, and maybe they weren't so attached to the commandments as, at that point, as they could have been or should have been or whatever we believe them to be, and they felt like they went through all this and maybe they just weren't committed to it.
Well, clearly not. They're not so committed because they seem to fold like a deck of cards over here.
Did you say in Shema, in the first paragraph,
do not go after your heart.
You'll go after that stuff and you won't remember to do the mitzvahs, right? And
okay.
Let them together. So it seems like it is a correlation. If they do go to this area of lust and sex, then they will go away from the
symptoms. Okay, let's go to the Sforno. Let's have Glenn read. People began to commit harlotry.
People began to commit harlotry. Originally, there had been no intention of committing idolatrous acts at all. All that the males had intended was to indulge their libido with the workmen folk.
Women folk. Not workmen, women folk.
Women folk. Thinking about work a lot, who made themselves available. However,
so basically, the women, apparently the Moabite women, and really, according to the Midrash, Bilam, who was unsuccessful in cursing the Jews, convinced the Moabite women that if you really want to bring the Jewish people down, you have to take one for the team. And your job is to go out there and seduce the men. Okay, that's a Midrashic thing. There's no mention of being, okay, so. They made themselves available, obviously. Okay, now let's go on. However,
these people fell victim to precisely the warning of Torah in Exodus 34:15-16 of what would happen if Jews would allow the Canaanites to remain in their country and conclude a covenant with them. They would be invited to their social gatherings, resulting in their eating forbidden fruits and eventually intermarriage followed by lip service to their gods.
But they didn't really, ultimately, they're not really believing in the God, but really, it all started with what? They wanted to have the affair. They wanted to have something, in other words, whether it be the forbidden fruit, whether it be that these people are by definition, let's go back to the high school model, they're by definition the cool people. They're the established nations. We're not established. So objectively, she's a prom queen. already intrinsically there's an appeal there. Much more exotic. In other words, if you're a Jew, you're a minority. If you're a minority, you feel like a loser, unless you feel good about being a Jew. So if your Jewish pride decreases, you need to fill that hole with joining the majority team. So it's what? Hanging out with the shiksa. Or the non-Jew, the shagits, the shiksa, the non-Jew. I'm not using the negative term. Okay? Now, this is what Chaim was meant to read on. Chaim, read the next thing.
This was a classic demonstration of how the evil urge works, first suggesting minor infractions of Torah law, and then gradually suggesting major sin.
Okay, so that's what you said. In other words, basically, first thing, they're going to go have an affair, and then they get invited to join the idolatrous festival. Or we're just going to eat. We're not going to believe in it. We're not going to participate. But already, they want to make the person and other people happy, so they start to conform. And then once they're conforming, they're already like, they're drawn in. And before you know it, they're going to the Christmas mass. Now they don't really believe it; that they might be a little foolish, but whatever. Now they're already sort of stuck. Sort of developmentally, they got drawn in. And this story is really the story of every assimilation story. This was never the intent, and never did. In other words, you know, would you ever go into a church? Would you ever go, you know, worship in a church? Even a non-Orthodox, non-secular Jew wouldn't generally do that. In other words, they may not be religious, but they're not going to believe in Jesus. They're not going to do the Jesus thing. All right, let's keep on going. All right, let's have, let me have Samantha. Rambam.
Let's see a part that a person who cares to conceive the Gentile woman is considered as a married possibility for a case engaging in relation to the daughter of the Gentile, and he is called the one who desecrated that
to the Gentile. They did such a very polite translation. I'm going to now translate it to much more simpler English. Okay. This is the Ram quotes the Talmud, says as follows, that one who has sexual intercourse with a non-Jewish person, the male or female, they pick the verse in Malachi talks about a Jewish guy with a non-Jewish woman. Maybe it's a more majority case, but now it's not. Okay, it's as if he married an idol. Now, why is that? And he quotes a verse that says the Hebrew is Haba el bas el nechar. He has relation, comes upon, has relation with the daughter of the foreign god. No, she's not just a woman. She's the daughter of the foreign god. So I ask you, I challenge you all, please, as every statement of the rabbis has a built-in riddle. Why can't guy says, no, he had I'm going to go back to Chaim's theory, the hot theory. He had secular, because he thinks she's hot, and he has nothing to do with any ideological positions or philosophical positions or religious positions. But the Talmud says, no, as if he got married to the idol. Please explain that to me. Who wants to throw out a theory?
If you want to say that sin is forgetting God and in reality, he's serving himself as God by doing this. So,
but then you can say that could apply to any. If you say that every sin in a certain sense forgetting God, because so that would it's specifically in this sin, it's not any sin, it's this sin. The question is like this: the Talmud makes the following thing. If a Jewish person has a sexual encounter with a non-Jew, the Talmud says it's as if it's analogous to they got married to an idol. So the question is, why do you, it seems pretty extreme. And then he quotes a verse from the last prophet, Malachi, who says, Haba el bas el nechar, he comes upon the daughter, the daughter of the foreign god. So look at the non-Jewish woman as the daughter of the foreign god. And how is she? She wasn't born to the foreign god. So I'm asking you to sort of like.
Okay, so I'm throwing something out.
Throwing something out there, Samantha.
Well, because I feel like you talked about this before, and I don't know what you're right here. But
okay.
I think it's really super dangerous in a relationship with a Jewish man.
It dangers both ways.
It dangers both ways, really, but I'm going more with this.
Yeah.
Because, like, the woman is, like, are we assuming these people are getting married?
No, it's not. It's not. It's
this is just like a lust thing.
This is not in the earlier halacha. He talks about there's a biblical prohibition to intermarriage. Here is not talking about. We're talking about even a one night stand.
We are talking about one night stand.
Yes.
Oh, then okay. I'm
going to
not make
a
point.
Okay.
I just thought of something. As a combination of, I guess, what you're saying and you're breaking down, as far as the woman is, trying to fit in, and there's a building block step of that nature. So then, and we see from already here that they go from the woman to idolatry, and technically being with that woman is like being like the daughter of a idolatrous nature. We're like,
it's a one night stand. I mean, I'm going to push back. I'm going to say what all the guys are thinking. It's a one night stand. It doesn't mean anything.
Right, but it's bringing that one step closer, like we just saw.
Yeah.
But it's like, it's almost like she's being, even the one night stand is like her bringing him back to the parents. Who are the parents in this case? Parents is a god of another religion or a false god.
Yeah.
That'd be the potential parents of the Jews.
So are you giving me the slippery slope theory? In other words, if you start here, you can have over here?
Well, saying it's automatic, but with what based on what I was going to say, is like you say, you don't film and say we're engaged to God every day. We're like this chosen people, and we're the chosen of the nation, that we're supposed to be on a higher level and kadosh and holy. And
okay, what happens in Vegas stays in Vegas.
So that's
going to keep on pushing back.
So when you're married and you live with that attitude, it doesn't really work.
Okay.
So it's like,
that's because that's a betrayal to the relationship
and God. And
so you're saying, but why is it?
So it's even when I stand, it's in that moment that you're really making that commitment to the other guy.
But you're not making a commitment, you know.
I just put on.
When the guy says "take care," he means "take care," like take care of yourself.
But you also, he also said "take care to God" when he did that. He said, "Bye, God."
Okay, but that's true if a guy has a cheeseburger in a certain sense, using metaphor. So that what's specifically about?
They didn't have cheeseburgers in the
desert. Not getting into the essence of the sexual encounter. Okay. Okay, so first of all, what you're saying is true, but the Talmud, which the Ram quoted, is actually much more emphatic, saying one who has a sexual encounter with a non-Jewish woman is considered as if he's married an idol, or that one at time, that's it. Not like because it will lead to idolatry. That itself, it has an element of idolatry in its own sense, and I ask you, how so? All right, so I got your attention. Okay, here's the deal. Say this in a nice way. Here's the deal. That no matter how Tinder-esque, physical, not emotionally engaged the relationship encounter is, okay? You got that? Still, let me give you a scenario. A guy, it could be a girl, mix the genders any way you feel comfortable with, meet somebody at a bar. Okay? It happens all the time. Go to Anson Avenue. All those bars, that's what it's for. Big part of the business. And they like each other, attracted to each other. The woman excuses herself to go to the bathroom. He then, he finds out her name, and he Googles the name. And up comes that she was convicted of being a class 2 or 3 sexual offender. Tell me what's going to happen the rest of the night.
There's no rest of the night.
He's attracted to her, but 1 second before that he pressed search, he was attracted to her. He found her, as you described, hot.
He's out of there after a drink. He's done. He's not even going back to the table.
Okay, so why is that? So what's that? What he would know the 1 second before he was attracted to her.
There's something about her that completely violates his ethical standards, I guess.
So how's that? So apparently,
he can't get past that.
So there's a very interesting thing. So no matter how "quote unquote" physical the encounter may be, it's never just physical. It fundamentally, if you have to in your own mind be able to say the following phrase: that this person is fundamentally a good person. You have to be able to say that, and if you discover, like on the Google search, the person is not a good person, no matter, even though that 1 second before you were in a full state of lust, it's gone. Why? Because man has a cell and leukemia, there's a psychological dimension. It's not just purely material. It's not a physical exchange only. And as such, so let's put back. So if the woman is a non-Jewish woman, he has to say that her and her culture is what? Not that bad. So by even on the very one encounter, he is signing off saying that the non-Jewish, and by extension, the Gentile, idolatrous culture is what? Not that bad. So the Talmud says, it's as if he married the idolatry. What does it mean? Not literally. It means that fundamentally, in order for this encounter to go through, he has to say, it's okay. Has anybody hear Danny Kaufman's speech? He's given a couple times at MGM. I don't know if he ever was. So Danny Kaufman, he says this publicly many times at MGM. He's going to sell you the punchline of the story. He was together with a non-Jewish woman. In the morning, he was reaching to the table, the light table. I guess, I don't know, looking through the glasses. He picks up her cross. And he had a moment like, holy schnike. Okay, he felt like because you recognize it's not just an encounter. It's not true. It's a cult. It's signing off on that person's culture. And he could not do that, even if he was at that point not religious at all. This is much more profound. You know what I'm saying? This is far more subtle. Okay? This is a very profound insight of the Talmud, the basis, because you could only have a sexual relationship with a person that you have to say on some level is a good, you view as a good person. But if you're saying that the idolater is a good person, that's fundamentally, you just gave up the essence of the Torah. The whole Torah is a war against idolatry and that kind of falsehood.
But that person can still be a good person as long as you're
I'm not saying you can't be a friend with a non-Jew.
Right, okay.
We're talking about has a sexual
relations
with that person.
Okay.
Okay. Yes.
But I would say,
you got to be very. But having said that, you got to be careful in this area.
Right.
What?
Right.
That's a slippery slope. That is a slippery. Yes. Yeah. You got to be very thoughtful about that, because. You know, first you're going out for just drinks. doesn't end well. Doesn't end well always.
Do you really consider like
Muslim idolaters?
No.
Right, so I'm not going to go into the. Taking it on the halachic standpoint.
Okay.
I'm just more interested in the. It's prohibited, but I'm just trying to convey a certain idea. I'm not going to the. all the different permutations here. Let's go on a little more. Yeah, read on. Dan the man.
Where are we?
Halacha 7.
Although this transgression is not punishable by execution by the court, it should not be regarded lightly, for any exception one that has no parallel among all the other provisions of the relief. For a child conceived from any other forbidden sexual union, is the father's son with regard to all matters and is considered a member of the Jewish people, even if he is a bondman. By a Gentile woman, by contrast, is not considered a son. This is derived from Deuteronomy, for he shall sway your son away from following you. She turns.
turns him away from being one of those who follow God.
Okay, so in other words, he's trying to explain the following. In other words, the biblical prohibition is actually married, that the person marries a non-Jew. Rabbinically, and alluded to by the verses in Malachi, part of the latter prophets, it's he gets excommunicated from the Jewish people through the prophet. In other words, it's not the same level. It's even though it's not really a biblical violation, it's very severe because you have a child with a non-Jewish woman. That woman, that child is not yours. There's no relationship with that child. Biologically, your child, you take care of that child, but it's not your child. Halachically.
How does it work with
a,
this is saying man of a
non-woman,
but how does it work
together? So with a woman, she, it's halachically, if a Jewish woman has relations with a non-Jewish man, that child is a Jewish child.
Right. Okay.
How does that work? How does that work? Why was that only done in one way? The next one question. No, but it's also prohibited. This prohibition is equal male, female, female, male. It's just that the penalty is not as severe. In other words, the consequence is not so severe.
So
in other words, it didn't say that if a Jewish woman has a child, conceives a child with a non-Jewish husband, you don't say, we don't say that that child is not Jewish. It's a Jew. Now, by the way, interesting awesome thing. It's not that it's nothing. That child can't marry a coin.
Right.
Okay, it's not, whatever, but it's indicating something.
A child with a non-Jewish father can't marry a coin.
Correct. Okay, so it's a good question. I don't have a good answer.
So, I'm just trying to understand. So,
what happens?
If the father is Jewish and the mother is not Jewish, she's not converted. Also, you keep in mind. Not Jewish.
Not Jewish and not a son.
And it's not a parent.
It's even harsher.
That's what I meant. It's not his father.
Also not his child.
And where is that recognized? That recognized in Israel? Or if they were
the,
like, I don't know.
The Jewish law and Israeli law, that's a complicated thing. We're trying to understand just the basic law. Now, I want to put this all into a neat little package here. So, what we shared the first initial phenomena, which was called the Shiksa goddess, which I think was also expressed on Seinfeld, also famously. Shiksa appeal. Thank you. So this, okay.
The Shiksa derogatory
is not a good word. The word Shiksa it comes from Leviticus. Sheketz means a detestable thing. So Shiksa means Shagetz, the female of Shiksa, there's Shiksa and Shagetz, those are Yiddish, mostly Hebrew words, which give a very negative connotation. I mean, you're saying abominable, okay? So the proper way to say is a person is a non-Jew, or a goy, I mean, part of the nations of the world. It's very generic. The Yiddish term Shiksa and Shagetz is much. It has a clear, very negative. It's not.
Hollywood,
it's already
used.
I understand.
New York, it's used.
I understand that.
The non-Jew will use it. Like, I'm happy to be your.
Yeah.
I understand it. So it became part of the. It became part of the lingua franca. Fine. It became part of the language. All right. That's step one. But let's understand that. My goal here is just to show the many layers to this whole thing. So the point here is that we show from the actual episode in the next parsha that it's not simply that the women are more sexually, it's got nothing to do with sexuality. It's not intrinsically about sexuality. There are the other overlays, which is the fact is, as we'll go through the book, J point, it's a forbidden fruit phenomenon. They're again, they have the aspect of something more exotic. Two, the relationship with that person is more appealing because it's in a certain sense freer because there's none of the Jewish guilt or Jewish rules associated with that whole thing. You're free. Three, it is that the person is part of the cool group. They're part of the majority. and therefore by, as the Woody Allen, by being part of the majority WASP culture, you sort of like, you're now going to get accepted. You're going to get what you want, which is really social acceptance. It's not about the sexual piece of that, okay? Those are three elements. There are probably more. Conversely, the terror forbids that, or certainly for a marriage, but then even on a one-night stand encounter, because fundamentally the nature of sexuality is such that based in order to have a sexual experience with somebody, you have to minimalistically be able to say, hopefully more, but minimalistically, that this person is okay. Is a hits the bare minimum of a good person. And the proof that I gave you was that if you discovered after you already are interested sexually with that person, that the person was a sexual predator and they were convicted by that, you would somehow, your interest would suddenly what? Dissipate. I could give you another example. Or you found that the person was, like, let's say back, was a Nazi. Okay? No, thanks. You see, it's clearly not purely the mechanical, physical attraction alone. Okay, so therefore, that in order to do that, to have that thing, is basically to say that this person and their extension, their culture, is fundamentally good, or good enough, is acceptable to me on some level.
Why?
That's
made a nitpick and argue at the point, but
nitpick away.
It doesn't have to anything to do with how the religion or them or anything of that nature. It's just, the guy is fully in lust and fully in, he wants, you know.
But I showed you. It's not,
I'm saying even that example.
But he has to say.
He doesn't have to say it like somebody else.
Could a guy have?
He could be a good person. It doesn't do
hold with, on one sec. Hold on. Let me hold on.
Religion. Religion.
I'm going to quote Chaim. You told me 4 minutes ago that if a guy did the Google search of the woman, and even though he was 1 second before was overwhelmed with lust.
I was agreeing with your theory.
What's that? 1 second. You're now contradicting yourself. But then you say that the date's over. And now you say the date's not over?
I'm saying, for the guy to just have that one-night stand, I'm saying, we're not talking about a relationship here, right? You said the one.
But I'm saying, minimalistic relationship.
So I'm saying that minimalistic relationship, as long as the guy feels that he's safe, or he's not getting the disease, but that, it doesn't mean a toleration on the religion of the person. It means that he's tolerating so many.
It's a nuanced point.
But I'm saying the nuance is not fundamentally to the religion or idolatry. It's the nuance to... It doesn't mean that person, say, psychologically, that person's lifestyle is okay. It just means the lifestyle is okay enough that I want to go back to bed with the person.
But which means that the person, but again, but what the Talmud always uses the method of exaggeration. It doesn't mean if you have sex with them, means you automatically, like the people in the thing, are going to actually go to, take communion tomorrow. Okay.
No, it's a form of an absence of another God.
Fundamentally, it's a fundamental of the first step of connection is acceptance.
I don't think so. Let's take that example. Let's use the example right here in the parasha in Tempus. There's no acceptance of the other religion here.
If you're doing it, you're accepting. You can't say, I'm doing it and I'm connected.
The whole point is that it's a desecration of God.
That's a
conclusion. And therefore, because of something spears them.
No, hold on. Back up the truck here. It's only three psukim. Israel was staying at Shittim and the people began to behave immorally. I mean, they had sex with Moabite women. Boom. So that, were they thinking idolatry? Says it's for no.
Right.
Free sex. Okay? Clear. Everybody, we're, so far it was purely instinctual. But there was a catch. There always is. You know what the most expensive sex is? Free sex. Think about that. Top of the mic here. Think about that, because we have pasuk number two. The girls invited. Hello? The girls invited the people to the religious sacrifice. Could they now in a position to say no? No. And they ate. Are they going to partake of the korbanot? Are they going to have a little bit of a steak? They're having a little steak. Are they going to have some of the sacrificial wine? They're having some of the sacrificial wine. And they worship. Now it says they did it in a lip service way. They didn't do it with a full kavana. They didn't sort of, all right, I'll do it. All right. And then verse three, then that doesn't mean this happened in 5 seconds. It took some time. But the Torah combines to show you A, then B, then C. C, boom, Israel was then involved in Baal Peor, and the God displayed anger against him. It became acceptable. And that which was not that long earlier was unacceptable. it's a shocking thing to our minds that behavior and things that all of us have experienced, things that we would never ever do. It's a short walk to be able to do that. It's a short walk. But I understand that there's consequences, but I'm just saying it's a shocking point. That's what, and that's how the Yetzirah, this is the whole point. So how does the Yetzirah, how does our evil inclination operate? It first gets you in to do the smaller sins. And once you're already in, you get you're cranking it up.
So my point is that, go ahead, question.
Hold on before I go into Chaim. Did I make the case in your minds?
Yeah.
Okay, fine. Go on, Chaim.
That's my point is, so exactly. So this is a situation here. It's that step process.
Yeah.
The Sfarno is saying it happens and it's the victim of the other step in Exodus and how there is a process. And the Rambam would be saying it's shorter. It's not a process. It's like that.
No. You mistaken the Norse. He's saying, Norse, he says, the key word, it's as if he married because it's much more Norse, because these things operate first initially, subtly, and you become, with the use of common performance, you become comfortable with it. Are you comfortable with that? Okay, are you comfortable with that? Is that acceptable to you? Okay, when you become comfortable with it, fundamentally, there's a certain thing in your mind that's okay. And it becomes okay, then it becomes very easy to become attached.
Well, I think it's like a numbing of the, it's like a numbing of the mind. And also it makes you very vulnerable. And because of that, you're very vulnerable.
Correct. That's exactly the point here. In other words, what's the Havamin? Let me explain what the Havamin is. Havamin is what you would have thought. There's no word in Talmud, you have the Havamin, what you would have thought of. The Maskana is your conclusion. Your Havamin was like thinking like a guy. Sex is basically meaningless. That could have a one-night stand, mean nothing. It's hard for women to really, I know you're not going to accept that, but guy can be very divorced from that. Okay? Look at Tinder. Okay? A. B. But the Maskana is, no, it's not true. It has a very subtle, but strong, but subtle impact. Because you have to sign off it internally. The inner voice that say, I am now comfortable with the woman and her fundamental values on a certain level. Okay? And that's it. And that's a level of involvement of idolatry. Because the Torah takes a zero tolerance approach to idolatry. It's not like kind of okay. No, it's not okay at all. It's like child molestation. It's not like a little child molestation is okay. No, it's not okay at all. No amount is good. Okay? Zero tolerance. Okay? Is that clear? Okay, so this is now, look, all of us, there's nobody around this table, myself included, who doesn't have family where intermarriage is an issue. Maybe not be in your immediate family, but go one or two degrees out, it's everybody. Okay? I'm just saying now you have a subtler understanding of the workings. And that's why, conversely, it's so important to have Jewish friends. Because we're so vulnerable that if you want to see who you are, look at who your friends are. And if you have good Jewish friends, you are a good Jew, by and large. And if you don't, it's a hard road. That's really, basically in life, you can, it's hard to make the right decisions, but if you can choose your friends, you can be just, you know, judicious with your friends, that's a major factor. So important. And not saying that, you know, it's not saying that hating on, no, they're not nice people, they're great people. I'm just saying for your own spiritual well-being, you want to maximize the Jewish relationships, and keep your non-journalism, you know, more on the professional level. As much as you can. Now, it's very hard because maybe, you know, everybody here went to secular college and it could have been all, you know, your roommate and everything were non-Jews. But, you know, you have to be thoughtful about that. I'm not saying you ghost on them the 4 seconds, like, delete them from my calendar, take them off the Facebook. No, don't do that. But I'm just saying, you know, you can chill out the relationship. There's, you know, Wax on. Okay. All right. Hope I'll give you guys some things to think about. Turn the channel a little bit. We had some good lines here tonight.
Yeah. Way to go,
Rob.
Yeah.
Okay. This was good. All right. This is a touchy area and a mixed the thing. I mean, whatever.
Yeah, it was really good.
Okay. What? All right.
Wait, I have a question.
Yeah, on question.
The side. On the side. Where they find where you get the why you can't have non kosher wine because of the relationship? Is this like the source where they get it, or is it?
So that's an excellent, interesting question. One aspect is, the biblical prohibition is actually drinking wine of. Which is part or dedicated for idolatrous service. The rabbis, when the Jews were being launched into the diaspora, they made a rule that any wine, kosher wine, that was touched by a non-Jew is forbidden to you. Why? Because wine is such a vehicle of socialization and thus intermarriage. So therefore, they want to restrict the amount of wine. So therefore, if the wine is mavushal, it's a pasteurized wine. They didn't include that in the prohibition because it's a junkier wine. Okay, so the rabbis left a little bit of room so you could have social relations, have business relations with them, but they wanted you to minimize your social relations. Because if you're drinking with them, you're dating them, you're marrying them. All right.
Thank you.
Got it.